يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series from the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Hello, and welcome to part two of our special Middle East Analysis podcast. In part one, you might remember, we talked about the election of the new Maronite Patriarch. And in this part, we're going to talk about Libya, and in particular, the UN Security Resolution. We're going to speak a little about Iraqi Christians and the Persecuted and Forgotten Report, in which Archbishop Bashir Warder has been over in London talking about that very report. And finally, we're going to touch on Ramallah and talk about the demonstration about the divisions in which the people want Hamas and the PLO factions to come together to meet their aspirations a little better. So, Harry, let's start. There's a lot to put in there, isn't there? But let's start with Libya and the UN Security Resolution. Now, that's more than a no-fly zone, isn't it?
There is a lot to say, James, and hello to your listeners. And again, I think we should do this as sound bites or teasers because things are moving so fast and it's the weekend, so people could reflect on some of the issues that are happening in the whole Middle East, North Africa region. I mean, the Libya question is essentially a very, very important question because the United Nations Security Council last night, almost near midnight, voted in favor of this resolution, which was voted by 10 with 5 abstentions and no vetoes or opposition to it. So in a sense, it basically gives the right to use all means available in order to stop the harassment and persecution and discrimination of the Libyan people by the Gaddafi battalions or army. The interesting thing is that there's been a lot of soul searching in the past few days about what can the West do, how would the West react to it. France and the United Kingdom, here our own Prime Minister David Cameron, have been instrumental in pushing this resolution forward despite the misgivings of other countries. Lebanon, as the only Arab country sitting on the United Nations Security Council, also was supportive of this resolution. And basically, it opens up, it frees up the possibility of taking action in Libya by European and Arab countries, with one exception only: no boots on Libyan territory, no occupation of the land, but all other means are allowed. Let me just say one very quick comment on this, which I think would interest your listeners. The difference between this and Iraq, because a lot of people have said that, well, we went into the quagmire of Iraq and look what happened there. Look what's happening today in Afghanistan. I share with many, many people the serious worries about where this could lead, because it could change everything and it could change nothing. And it's a very serious moment at the moment that we're facing. However, the major difference is that, unlike the Iraq situation, we've got a very clear endorsement by the United Nations Security Council to undertake this action. So international law and international legitimacy have been met fully. And the second very important point is that the Arab League has also endorsed this move and has actually asked for a no-fly zone earlier than the passing of this resolution. So in a sense, it is with Arab acquiescence, and nobody can then turn round, and the Libyans certainly can't turn round and say, well, this is a Western colonialist adventure to take Libya and its oil wells back from its own original owners. That is not the case. This is just a case of fighting for freedom, for basic human rights, and let's face it, for the interests of the West in that part of the region.
Harry, let's talk Iraq. Mm-hmm. And in the context of persecution, a report has been released, Persecuted and Forgotten, a report by Aid to the Church in Need. And Archbishop Bashir Warder of Erbil in Iraq was over to actually bring forth that report. It says that 75% of all religious persecution is directed towards Christians in that country. Let's first of all hear from Archbishop Bashir Warder about the reasons why that might be, and then Harry, if you can pick up on the back of that.
Certainly.
Christians tend to be persecuted in Iraq by majority populations for two reasons: their Christian faith, which is not accepted in Iraq by Islamic fundamentalists and for political purposes to control land and resources allocation in the dispute area.
There is no doubt that the Christians are facing horrible persecution in Iraq. I've spoken out time and again when people have talked about persecution of Christians across the world. I've always said that if you really want to see persecution, one of the countries one should visit or focus on is Iraq. Because indeed, pre the American and Allied invasion of Iraq, there were roughly about 1.4 million Christians living in Iraq, indigenous native Christians, which belonged to a 2,000-year-old civilization, and now there are anything between 300,000 and 150,000 Christians left. So almost two-thirds of the Christian communities, Catholic, Orthodox, and Reformed churches have left the country. And this is a dire loss. It's a painful loss for the whole country. And part of it is because of the systematic persecution, the attacks against Christians. I would just put this little thought for us during this Lenten period. The issue is not an issue of the majority Iraqi communities persecuting Christians because they are Christians and belong to another faith. It is more to my eyes and my knowledge and understanding of the country and my travels to the country is that most Iraqis, Muslim and Christian, have been able to get along side by side for decades and decades. It's more a small rump of Muslim extremism who are hell-bent, those extremists are hell-bent on prevailing upon the political situation in Iraq by denying Christians their basic integrity, dignity, and freedoms, and therefore creating more divisions in the country. And one of the rules of extremism is divide and rule. You divide between people, and then you become the strong one, and you dictate your own agenda. So in a sense, the Christians are being scapegoated, and their Christian faith is being scapegoated for political purposes. So I wouldn't paint this with a broad brush stroke and say it's basically a Muslim-Christian issue in Iraq. I would say it's an issue with some radical extremist Muslims who are attacking Christians for their own agendas. And this is deplorable. It's heinous, and it should be spoken out, and I believe the Holy Father has spoken about it, just as has our own Archbishop Vincent Nichols here in this country.
Well, certainly a point for prayer, without a shadow of a doubt. Let's, Harry, conclude by talking of Ramallah on the West Bank and demonstrations that you've pointed out to me, really focusing on divisions between Hamas, PLO, the factions, and the people wanting them to come together, actually, and to represent them better in their view.
This is interesting because, James, when we are looking at the whole Middle East, North Africa region, we're looking at demonstrations, at angry confrontations in Bahrain and Yemen, for instance. Things are turning very bloody very quickly. And at some stage, we'll have to think about Bahrain and Yemen again in more serious terms. But then you have demonstrations and uprisings all over this region. Interestingly enough, the Holy Land, for which the Catholic Bishops Conference and particularly its International Affairs Department has a years-long interest and involvement through the Holy Land coordination, it's very interesting that those patterns of uprisings and confrontations and people power have also manifested themselves within the Palestinian territories. The gist of it is that Palestinians are fed up, tired, sick to the teeth of this division between Hamas in Gaza and the PLO in the West Bank, each pulling its own way. And this tug of war between those two forces is basically not only not helping the socioeconomic situation of Palestinians, it is not helping edify peace, it is not helping Palestinians reach any of their objectives. So lo and behold, just as we see in Yemen, Bahrain, Morocco, Jordan, even Syria, demonstrations by some people against the intransigence of the regimes, so is it in Ramallah, which is somewhat the capital of a Palestinian non-state, saying enough is enough, get your heads together, guys, get back the unity that the Palestinians have always been proud of, Christians and Muslims alike, and try and move forward so that we might have some peace, we might have some socioeconomic comfort. And this is also interesting because I think that this story would also develop, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are conciliatory moves both by Hamas and the PLO to try and heal this wound that has been going on for the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, peace and reconciliation, certainly things to pray for. And crikey, what a busy time in the region. Now, I'm going to do something that could be quite dangerous, Harry, because I'm going to throw the floor open to you.
Ouch.
Knowing
James, you're taking a risk, even though we've known each other quite well for now.
It is, but one I'm willing to take. Now, knowing that you've just returned from your travels to the region, mm-hmm. I'm going to say to you, it's over to you. What do you want to say on the back of your recent travels?
I'm going to leave listeners and you perhaps with two thoughts. The first is that we are going through the Lenten period. And the Lenten period is one of reflection, prayer, and sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So let us all pray at least for all those peoples in the Middle East and North Africa who are going through unimaginably different, difficult times in each and every one of those countries. What we see on our television screens is nothing compared to the fear, uncertainty, worry of ordinary citizens in all those countries that we call the MENA region. The other thought I would leave, if I may, James, is I'm going to recite a verse from an Arab poetry that sums up what is happening in the whole region and how it is causing this clash between different forces. And I'll try and translate it in as best as I can. إِذَا الشَّعْبُ يَوْمًا أَرَادَ الْحَيَاةِ فَلَا بُدَّ أَنْ يَسْتَجِيبَ الْقَدَرِ. Roughly translated, this is a very famous verse of poetry in Arabic culture. It says, if the people one day wanted and proclaimed life, it is inevitable that fate has to respond to their call and their prayer. And that is basically what is happening in the region these days. Ordinary people of different affiliations, secular, political, cultural, ethnic, socioeconomic, are all calling for life, normal, decent, ordinary life. It is inevitable that one day fate will respond. And I will end again by saying it because I think it's very impressive. And those of our listeners, if they know Arabic, they would appreciate this verse. إِذَا الشَّعْبُ يَوْمًا أَرَادَ الْحَيَاةِ فَلَا بُدَّ أَنْ يَسْتَجِيبَ الْقَدَرِ. And to that, all I can say, Amen.
Amen.